Welcome to Her Story on a Plate, a place for real talk about real bodies.
Let's dish about our complex relationships to food and bodies.
We are two experts in the field coming at this from an anti-diet, your body holds wisdom approach.
This podcast is all about changing the conversation we have in our heads and culture so that we can embrace ourselves fully. We're excited to introduce you to Nancy Loeffler today. She is the author of The Alchemy of Grief, Your Journey to Wholeness. We had such a deeply compelling conversation about grief and how grief impacts us all.
Nancy is a mother who lost her 17-year-old daughter, Leah, in a car accident in November of 2000. So she fully understands the territory and the stages of grief. Her daughter's death provided a doorway to her transformation that she never expected.
We talk not only about really big losses, but also about the daily griefs we experience about expectations, our bodies, our relationship to food, just to name a few.
Nancy now helps others to navigate grief as well as co-hosts a weekly radio show about it. Her passion is changing the conversation around grief and helping her clients find meaning, purpose, and joy again so they can fully participate in their lives. Nancy, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
I think the first question I really have for you is how you came to write this book. Obviously, and you can share as much or as little as you like, you and your family endured quite a tragedy. Most people, when they endure a tragedy like that, it takes everything they have to simply get through their lives after that. And on top of that, you've done so much work. So we're just curious if you could take us a little bit into that story. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the book is not something I wanted to write. All throughout my grief journey, I heard the story of someday you're going to write a book. And I thought, yeah, sure, right. Someday I'm going to write a book. But right now I'm grieving my daughter and I didn't know how that was going to come about. So you're right. I did a lot of work and I got to the point where, well, I guess it's important to tell this part of the story. Just shortly after Leah died, I heard a message that said, losing Leah is too high a price to pay to not live the life you were meant to live. Mm-hmm. And that really, I had no idea what it meant at that time or how I was going to figure it out, because at that point, I didn't want, and it's not that I didn't want to live. I didn't know how I was going to live a life that had any meaning or purpose in it. So my grief journey became about excavating that life, the life that I was meant to live. And so I did a lot of work. I tried to do a lot of other things before I said yes to this work. And so after I did that and began helping clients, I thought, okay, I've made it. This is the life I was meant to live. I'm helping clients. There's meaning and purpose in that. And that's when I heard it's time to write your book. And I just shut that down big time. I'm not an author. I don't want my story out there in black and white for people to read. So I said no, and I resisted writing the book until it was easier to write it than continue resisting it.
What you resist persists, right?
Yep.
Even in this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And I want
Nancy, you said,
go ahead, please.
Sorry, Nancy, you said something so beautiful, which was excavating the life you're meant to live. And there's something so compelling about the foil of loss and claiming, right?
Yes.
I've lost something, and now I am compelled to claim.
Right.
And how we do both.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it felt like, excavating it, because my life was completely ripped apart, and I had to figure out which pieces to pick up again and which pieces not to pick up again. And I was already doing a lot of work, a lot of inner work, working on childhood wounds when Leah died. And that gave me the opportunity to go really deep. And I was able to, my work not only included grieving, but it was also healing on a deeper level from those childhood wounds.
Yeah.
I was really struck by the detail and the honesty with which you wrote this. I felt like I was transported into the moment with you. It's a very generous thing to share that with people. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it makes a big difference for people. I hope it was helpful to you too. You used a phrase that really struck me. You said it was like crossing the border of a new country. Can you say how you came to that metaphor? It's so right on target.
Yeah, well, the second part of that is without knowing the language or the customs or anything else about the country. And that's what it felt like. It felt like I was plopped down in this territory I was in the unknown. But in this case, I didn't know how I was going to get from one moment to the next moment in this new, really raw, devastating place that I was. I didn't know how to live without Leah's physical presence in my life, in our lives. And at the time, I was married, I still am, and my son was 20 at the time. And I say this now, thankfully, I didn't have to be a mother to him like I would have if he was younger. So I just did it on my own, and my husband did, and my son did as well. We were able to do that. But I was in this place of isolation, and I didn't know how I was going to get through this unknown territory that I didn't know the language or the customs or anything.
I love the title of the book, The Alchemy of Grief, Your Journey to Wholeness.
Yes.
So it leads me to ask you two things. First of all, is wholeness in this way achievable, at least on a minute-by-minute, day-by-day basis?
Yeah, in my experience, it is, and that doesn't mean it doesn't fall apart in the next minute. However, the alchemy is that we have the resources. I have the resources. I teach the resources to be able to get back to that wholeness or redefine wholeness, because it's not what I thought it was. And it changes all the time, because one of the resources is learning how to feel the full spectrum of our feelings.
Yes.
You know, before this, I was in this bandwidth trying to stay in this comfortable. If I don't go too far this way, everything will stay on an even keel. And I found out that when I go to the difficult and painful feelings, I can feel everything on this side too. And so that I don't know how it happens, but that's what I experience as the alchemy.
And Nancy, what you're speaking to so beautifully is getting comfortable with uncomfortable.
Yes, getting comfortable with uncomfortable.
I have a question totally from a personal understanding of grief. And there's two analogies that I've seen for grief. And I wonder if either of them fit for you or how your experience with grief unfolded. And one is, and you might have seen this, it's based on a drawing that Lauren Heschel drew about life as a box and grief as a giant ball inside that bounces against pain. And it's a big ball in the beginning, and slowly it diminishes, but it's unexpected when it hits the pain. And then the other analogy is this idea of grief being this big ball in a jar of life, but the ball stays the same, but our jar grows in capacity to hold grief. And I'm wondering what your experience is with that.
Yeah, I can relate to both of those analogies. In the first one, especially early on, the ball feels huge and it's hitting constantly. You know, it's never not hitting something because the pain is so intense and so great. And I think we've heard time heals all wounds, but what I like to add to that is what we do with the time that helps to heal those wounds. And so as I was able to feel the feelings when they hit eventually, not right away, when I was able to feel the pain or what I use is a presence practice called Samyama, which is bringing those feelings to my heart. So when I was able to be with those feelings in my heart, that's when the ball got smaller. So the ball's still there, and there certainly are times when the pain arises and I feel the grief of losing my daughter, and that's when I'm able to bring that feeling to my heart and acknowledge it. The other one, yes, definitely cultivate a greater capacity to be with the pain. They kind of go hand in hand, because when you feel the feelings, when I feel the feelings, that's when I develop a greater capacity to feel the feelings, to bring them to my heart and allow my heart to alchemize them.
You know, for any of us that have been through the grieving process and continue to go through it, you know, I think one of the myths is that there's some prescribed period of time that you should just get it done, handle it, finish it, be done, and then you should just go on with your life, right? As if that were possible or as if that were helpful. It's not. I think it's important to say that grief comes in waves, literally for all of your life. And it doesn't take much. TV commercial, seeing two people walking in the street. I mean, anything that reminds you of someone.
And that's an associative memory. Yes. And associative memories bring us right back into the grief.
Yeah. And so I bring this up because I can only imagine what that's like for you. And the question is there a bit of a resilience that starts to form? Yes, it comes in waves. Yes, it could be on a daily basis. It could be on an hour-by-hour basis. Over time, is your sort of recovery time faster? Are you able to sort of process it differently than, say, in the beginning stages?
Yes, because now I trust that when I bring the feeling to my heart, it's going to shift. Right. So I've learned to trust the process. And yes, there is a resilience, because this is a lifelong journey. Now, it's not something that I will ever get over. And it also helps me to, I would like to think that if we teach people how to meet the, what I call smaller griefs, like missing a meeting or being in traffic, if we learn grief resources doing the smaller griefs, that when the larger griefs enter our lives, we'll have a place to start. For me, it worked the opposite way, because I didn't know how to meet grief. I was taught how to meet grief, like we all are, by not grieving, by not talking about our feelings, and that wasn't going to work for me.
Sure.
So yes, I definitely have developed resilience, and I'm not afraid now to go into the pain.
Yeah.
That I'm getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Peace.
Yeah. Nancy, I'm wondering if we can dive into this idea of smaller griefs, because one of the things Jenny and I talk about is her story on a plate, right? Our relationship with food, our story with food, our story with bodies, our body, and
our bodies,
and how grief intersects there, and how is that, you know, do we look at that as small griefs of the end? I always say I'm always sad when a meal ends, because I love eating, and it's not a big grief, but it's a little loss in the moment of really no more. That's a bummer, right?
Yeah. When I finally accepted the fact that gluten and dairy weren't good for the health of my body, I had grief because I liked them. And I didn't want to find substitutes that I liked. I wanted to eat bread and milk. And so I needed to honor that. I needed to honor what I was leaving. And that's what, besides feeling the feelings, honoring what came before so that you can move through what's coming next is another important piece of that.
Such a good point.
Honoring what came before so that we can move forward, right?
Yes, right.
I'll use your example, Nancy, because I think it's a great one. Some of the grieving that folks do, and we hear this in our practices, is more about deprivation. It's more about, well, you know, I don't want this meal or this dessert to end, not only because it's good, but because I don't usually allow myself to have these things because I'm trying to be good and this is being bad and I don't want to be bad all the time. Imagine if you allow yourself, with the exception of something that will really, you know, hurt your health, something you're allergic to. But imagine if you could, if we could all just allow ourselves the greatest variety all the time without moralizing about whether the food is good or bad, there'd be less grieving to do because unless you're someone who suffers from food insecurity, the idea is I can always have more later. This is a surprising and shocking realization that some of our clients have. Well, that's right. I could always have more later. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to is the full spectrum of the eating experience. It's similar to how I was talking about the full spectrum of feeling our feelings. So if we live to the full spectrum of our magnificent selves, in the full spectrum of our magnificent selves, then you're right. There is less to grieve because we're experiencing it.
I think we also
can we talk. Can we talk for a moment about all the different griefs around our bodies and food? Because it's such a rich issue. And there's the grief of the end of a meal. There's the grief in, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get this again. I gotta have it right now. There's also griefs around, wait, but I want this body that I was told I was supposed to have. You know, I always use the example for me. I was always told I was supposed to be tall, blonde, and thin. I've never been any of the above. So the grief of letting that ideal go, or for many people, the grief of fitting into the skinny jeans. So I'm wondering if we can just unpack all of that a bit.
Yeah. All of the things that you mentioned, not being able to wear the clothes that you want to wear, which is a complete lie, because we can wear whatever clothes we want. Not being able to, it's the not being able to. And whatever that is, or however that shows up, if we stay in that mindset, we don't allow for the possibilities of what's possible if we do honor that grief of not being able to have the bread or. And it's really reframing it to finding bread that I can eat, that nurtures my body, or finding clothes that make my body feel beautiful the way she is right now, or doing the kind of movement that makes our body, that stirs our soul. So it's really about, if we stay in this place of grief, we stay stuck, and we don't see the possibilities of the life we were meant to. I never could have excavated that life if I stayed in the, I'm never going to be able to, whatever the thing is, whether it's about grieving my daughter or whether it is a body image thing. And it's so prevalent. My 3.5-year-old granddaughter last night said, and this does not come from her family at all. We talk about this all the time. She said, if I eat too much watermelon, I'll get fat. And Dan and I just looked at each other like, what? Where did she hear this? It wasn't at home.
Unfortunately, she heard it everywhere.
It just, but she doesn't watch TV. She does not watch TV. So it must have been at school or whatever, but it just broke my heart.
It is heartbreaking because that's really early to be hearing that, although now it isn't, but yes. See, the thing that we tend to hear so much is about this. And it's hard. It's not always identified as grief. Eventually, we figure out it's grief. But we hear things like, I'm never going to have the body I thought I had. Or I was supposed to be married by a certain age. I was supposed to have a certain amount of money. I was supposed to have a certain amount of children. I was supposed to fit into all these different categories, whether it's about body size or finances or about anything else. You know, it's really, it's so damaging when we do that. But if we think about what the triggers are, that we are comparing ourselves to the rest of the world. And the advent of social media, God bless social media, but with the advent of social media, we're seeing the idealized version of people's lives and comparing our lives to theirs.
Exactly.
And it really, I think, perpetuates grief in some ways.
Yeah, it definitely does.
What you're speaking to is this, when there's an unfulfilled expectation, and Nancy, what you're saying is right underneath that unfulfilled expectation is grief. Right. And that grief must get explored and excavated so that we can live the life that is available to us, that is actually true.
Right.
Excavated, not meaning dug up and thrown out. Excavated meaning being brought to the forefront, being brought to the top of the pile so that it's recognized, it's visible, we can see it, we can live alongside of it, knowing that sometimes it's going to tap us on the shoulder.
Right. Excavating all the what doesn't serve us so the gold can rise.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I noticed in your book, Nancy, was this reliance on journaling. Journaling seemed to be a very important part of your process. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to that, because it's also something that we use a great deal in grieving all the other things we've been talking about.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Journaling was a part of my life before Leah died. And so journaling is something I did right from the start. It was a way for me to get the feelings that I wasn't ready to express verbally on paper. And I always find that when I journal for myself, not journaling, not writing for a blog or writing for something else, that the words come through me and I can get more clear about something when I journal about it than if I just think about it. So that's why it was very important. And I subsequent to that, I have published a journal that goes with the book. So
I think there are different kinds of journaling, right? There's certainly sort of like what we'll call sort of diary entries, right? This is what I experienced in my day today. And I sort of want to have a record of it. And these are the feelings that I have associated with that. And I want to write them down while they're current, right? There are other forms of journaling, which I think are very helpful, certainly in the grief process, which is really just about what all those feelings are right there in that moment. Just get them on paper.
Right. Just get them on
out
paper.
Out of your heart for the moment and onto paper, just so that you don't have to hold them and you have a place where they've been memorialized, whatever it's about. Yeah.
Exactly. The other kind of journaling I did was collaging or artwork, and that was very helpful as
well. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. Yeah.
So as we talk about journaling, are there other things when someone's dealing with either really big grief or the daily griefs? I love that that phrase that you coined around daily griefs versus small griefs, because they may not feel small to us, but they are daily grief.
They are daily griefs.
How else do you suggest opening the door to move in to really, I love how you said, like, uncovering what's there, letting go of what you don't need so that the gold can rise to the top, that definition of excavation.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest?
Well, movement is a great one, and movement can be done intentionally, whereas we intentionally use movement to express the whatever we're feeling, and just really take time to feel the feeling and then express it in movement. Or the opposite way, decide how you think anger might move and then move in that way. So both of those ways are really great ways to get into the feelings, allow the feelings to be expressed. Collaging and artwork, as I mentioned, was really helpful to me, and it's been really helpful to some of my clients.
Gratitude, for sure. Yeah,
and gratitude. You know, I've often, when I suggest that, my clients will say, "Well, what do I have to be grateful for?" And that's true. We don't feel like we have anything to be grateful for when we're going through a huge loss, like the death of my daughter. And start where you are, that we can be grateful for clean water to drink, a bed to rest on when we can sleep, people around to support us, or whatever it is. So, and self-care.
I like to call that taking inventory, right? Just take inventory, yeah. See what's in stock, then exactly. You can choose to see what you want exactly. To use and what you don't, right?
Exactly. And self-care looks completely different when you're grieving than in a more stable time of your life. So what does that look like? It may be eating a good nourishing diet, because I wanted to eat chocolate chip cookies and stay in bed, and that wasn't helpful.
Well, and for some it is, right? I mean, that's the point, right?
Well, it's helpful until it's not.
There's an emotional eating component, I think, for all of us, right?
Exactly.
And it rears its head when it rears its head, whether that's daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, it doesn't matter, right? But it is about having an awareness. And I think there's grace and kindness that's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Grace and kindness for whatever it takes for one to go through their own process, whether it's the process of grieving a loss or just the process of being alive. Whatever is your process, it does take grace and kindness. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
grace
time.
And blessings would count time. Yeah. And permission to use all the resources that we've been talking about. Permission to be kind to yourself, to give yourself grace, to feel the feelings.
I think as a final thought, we have to remind ourselves that we form neural pathways until we take our last breath. Our brains continue to learn literally no matter how old we live to be. Mm-hmm. And so there's always, look, we're formed beings, but we get to learn new behaviors, new reactions, new reflexes. We get to accept and honor the ones we have, but we have time to also continue to learn so that we don't always have to suffer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And Nancy, I want to reflect back to you. You know, I've known you for a while and how I've seen you claim your life fully. You know,
Thank you.
You said about, I need to grieve so that I can step into my truest self.
Mm-hmm.
And your example and your writing and your speaking is all an inspiration for us to come close to grief and to say, yes, we walk with grief every day.
Yes.
And how do we have that relationship with grief and the discomfort and the feelings in order to claim our fullest self? And so I really want to thank you for walking this really hard journey with, as Jenny said, with such grace to be able to show us this is how you do it. This is what it looks like. And is it easy? No. Is it possible? Yes.
And once again, the name of your wonderful book is The Alchemy of Grief, Your Journey to Wholeness. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Nina and Jenny, for the opportunity.
Pleasure.
This was great.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Her Story on a Plate.
Keep in touch with us at herstoryonaplate.com.
We'd love to hear from you.
See you next time.